It couldn't happen on the last session of the last day. The last session, last day of the first semester. Oh my gosh. Oh man. So great to be loved, isn't it, Joseph? Ariel, tell what you told Sonny the definition of what hell was. You answered his question.
Yes, hell is not passing the test for 3 times.
Sonny's 0 for 2. He's got to pass on. On this next Wednesday, you've got to get a 95. Or you'll have to come to America to take your fourth retake. All right, let's finish our last session on church history, session 8, Reformation and the Roman Reaction. No, I don't want to.
So we'll talk about this 5 months from now.
I'm sorry, it's my class. I do what I want.
We're going to talk about this 5 months from now again.
3 months.
3 months from now.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. You'll be okay. The Reformed tradition centers around 3 individuals. We looked at the Lutheran tradition last time. John Calvin, 1509-1564, born in France. Experienced a religious transformation around 1530. So, you see, a younger contemporary of Luther. 6 years later, he publishes Institutes of the Christian Religion.
Wow.
One of the most influential books in the history of the church.
Wow.
Probably after the Bible and Augustine's City of God, maybe the second or third most influential book in history. Been saved about 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I tried. Yeah, so.
Okay, so forget it.
I tried. No. No, a little tough. So he was trained as a lawyer, and it certainly shows in his writing. After conversion, he had to flee Paris. He used assumed names to escape because, you know, Roman Catholic France, and they're after him. The Institutes are probably the clearest exposition of Protestant doctrine. And it's what's made Calvinism and his influence so great throughout the centuries, because it's readable, apparently. Maybe I had a bad translation. He spent most of his life in Geneva, promoting the Reformation. Geneva's in Switzerland. And reforming the church. He tried to make Geneva a model community or a city of God.
Yeah.
So he was influenced by Augustine and carried some of Augustine's maybe erroneous thoughts about a theocracy into Geneva. So there wasn't a clear distinction between ecclesiastical authority and civil authority. And per Augustine in his eyes and his particular approach, exercise strict discipline over community morals. So they were watching you, basically, what you did. And the early American experiment were people who had been to Geneva, now many years after Calvin, of course, and were trying to duplicate the Geneva experiment in Plymouth and in Boston. And so you see, we have a thing in America called the Blue Laws. A lot of them are still on the book. A blue law is a law that regulates some kind of moral behavior that's still officially on the book but hasn't been enforced for a long time. So a lot of laws about what you can and cannot do in a moral context. So trying to strictly regulate people's external moral behavior. his theology and form of church government eventually triumphed in the Protestant church of France, Scotland, Hungary, Holland, Puritanism in England, and in New England. So, interesting character. Yeah, Joseph?
How did he get, how did he get power in Geneva as a pastor?
He was a pastor. He was his book gave him international recognition. And so he was pretty much a big deal.
So he wasn't like mayor or anything like that?
No, didn't hold office.
But people listened to him.
He was the pastor.
For political advice and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He ran the show. Ulrich Zwingli, Z-W-I-N-G-L-I. We met him first in Luther's description of him. 1484, born the same year as Luther, died 5 years before Luther, probably because Luther tormented him so much. He died young. Lord, I got to get out of here and get to heaven. His Luther is just wearing me out. He was born again by teaching the New Testament to his congregation in Zurich. Zurich, 1519, became the pastor of the church in Zurich. Inspired by Luther, he broke with the Pope also in Sweden. Now, the Pope at that time, Adrian VI, discovered what he was teaching, forbade him the pulpit, and asked the Zurich Council to repudiate him as a heretic. In 1523, the council upheld Zwingli and officially adopted the Reformation. So you see this happening a lot in Europe. I was in Norway in 1998, and Norway still has a state church, Lutheranism, and they've had a state church since 1526, and they adopted Lutheranism and the Lutheran church initially to break with the Pope. But in Norway with the state church, when you get your paycheck, no matter where you work, they've taken out your taxes and your tithe. Comes right out of your paycheck to the state church. Yeah, so tax and tithe. Where taken. Is this? This is Norway, yeah. Although now they have allowed it that if you are in a dissenting church, a non-Lutheran church, you can actually get your tithe to go straight to your church. So you don't have to worry about your church members tithing. They're going to take it out of their paycheck. And they'll have no chance to decide whether they want to tithe or not. That's what happens when you have a state church. But you see, back then, see, they can't break this concept. And the American experiment is different because they saw the ramifications where that leads. And so they started from the outset to have a clear separation of powers, learning from these bad examples. But so the whole nation of Switzerland, in essence, declares we're Protestants. So now if you're a citizen in Switzerland, you're a Protestant. Overnight. Because the council has ruled. The Reformation quickly spread to 6 districts in Switzerland, while the remaining 5 remain Roman Catholic. 1529, the hostility between the districts flared into war. And this is what you see, we call them the wars of religion that take place as a result of the Protestant Reformation and the conflict with the civil authorities and the Roman Church. And it's eventually going to lead to a deep secular spirit and anti-clericalism. People are just tired of people killing each other for religion. It's like the what you have in Ireland to this day, because of the continual wars, Protestant, Catholic, whatever. If that's what that's what God's about, I don't want to have anything to do with it. So it creates a total secular society, which will lead to the Enlightenment. We'll get there. John Knox, Knox, K-N-O-X. John Knox, the key figure of the Reformation in Scotland, founder of Scottish Presbyterianism, fascinating guy, ordained as a Roman Catholic priest, led to Christ, but then captured by the French and made a galley slave for 19 months, finally escaped the French and made his way to Geneva, where he was discipled under Calvin. and then eventually got back to his homeland. After training in Geneva, Knox went to Scotland and spent his life leading the church and shaping the character of the nation. His constant prayer was, "Give me Scotland or I die." His adversary, Mary Queen of Scots, once said, "I fear the prayers of John Knox more than an army of 10,000 men." I've been to his church in Edinburgh. It's St. Giles. And there's a statue of him in the church. And when I was there looking around, I talked to the rector, interested just in as much information I could get. So I want to know, so where's he buried? I mean, this is Scotland's great religious reformer and hero. I said, "Where is he buried?" And the guy kind of looked around and got in a little close. "We lost him." I said, "What do you mean we lost him?" He said, "We think he's buried under parking space number 3 out back."
Oh, no.
"We're not sure exactly." "We've lost him. He's just gone. They don't know. Probably under parking space number 3. That's all they got." No, I think he'll make it. He'll break through that. In reaction to the Reformed view of church and state, the Anabaptist advocated pacifism and opposition to state churches. They rejected the hierarchy of the church and the authority of civil bodies and religious matters. Because of this, they were accused of sedition and heresy by civil and religious leaders, both Protestant and Catholic. So the Roman Church and the Protestant Church agreed about one thing: we need to kill the Anabaptists. And they killed them together. Anabaptists, don't think of Baptists. That's not the roots of our Baptist churches. It's more, think of Mennonites, Amish. Do you know those groups? Yeah. So they are pacifistic. Generally, they won't participate in military duty, etc. They were radical pacifists. And this was sedition, really. Because when the church and the state are joined like that, whether it's the Protestant state or it's a Roman Catholic state, and you oppose the authority of the church, you really oppose the authority of the civil government. And in a sense, if someone is a traitor to this nation and is plotting the downfall of this nation, is caught, they should be tried and sentenced. That's just right. Well, the problem is the Anabaptists were in essence doing that by challenging the religious hierarchy, which was the same thing as challenging the civil authority. So all kinds of problems result because of that. Our lesson here is essential that the church has a right view of its relationship with the state. We don't get that wrong. Anglican Reformation. Henry VIII. And notice, born not that long after Luther, a contemporary, died 1 year after Luther. Ardent Roman Catholic, who had received the title Defender of the Faith by the Pope for his polemic against Luther entitled The Seven Sacraments. So Henry wrote a tract, a pamphlet, and the Pope so appreciated him, he gave him an official title. And to this day, the monarchs of England, when they are coronated, they take a whole list of titles. You know, they're actually, the Queen is the Queen over 19 different countries officially, but all sorts of different titles. One of the titles that they still take to this day that they got from the Pope is Defender of the Faith. Although Charles, if he ever gets there, which is looking more and more doubtful as we progress, Mama just refuses to go. But if he ever does, he's already stated that he will take that oath, but he's going to change it a little differently. He wants it to be changed slightly. He's going to receive the title Defender of the Faiths. plural, which is a very significant change. It's the move to pluralism, right? There is no one true right faith or view of God. So I defend all faiths. Everybody has the right, their own way towards God. That's an interesting sign of the times. Luther, Henry, and the Pope would all be turning over in their grave if they knew what Charles was planning to do. So ardent Roman Catholic, no doubt about that. But when Pope Clement VII denied Henry's divorce from Catherine of Aragon, Henry broke with Rome and declared himself head of the English Church. Now, of course, the problem was that Catherine couldn't have children. But the real problem is that Henry was absolutely smitten with Anne Boleyn. I've been to her castle, Hever Castle, in Kent, in the southern part of England, where Henry first met her and wooed her. And the problem was, is Anne Boleyn was definitely a looker. And Henry wanted her badly. Now, it was standard practice in those days, is you just take a concubine. That was just accepted. So she could have come into the royal palace and provided sexual favors for Henry. And, I mean, that's what Henry wanted. But she was too smart for that. So she'd entice him and then shut him down. Not until I get a ring on my finger. Not until we're married. And so she'd work him up into a fever pitch of passion. And then, at the last moment, shut him down. And just tormented him. And he became obsessed with this woman. Not just children, but got to have this woman. Now, getting divorces from the Pope, that was a pretty easy deal. The problem is, Catherine's nephew is Charles V, the most powerful man in the world, the Holy Roman Emperor, head of Spain, France, the most powerful person around. And Catherine's appeal to her nephew said, "This man's trying to divorce me and talk to the Pope. Don't let it happen." So Charles made the Pope an offer he couldn't refuse and disallowed him from doing it. So the Pope's hands were tied. He couldn't go against Charles. So they tried to do this complicated situation. The church has laws about consanguinity. That's who you can and cannot marry based on blood relationships, how close they are to you. And Catherine had actually been married to Henry's older brother, Arthur. Been married a month, but then he died. So Henry was trying to say, the reason why Henry was able to marry her in the first place is she said under oath that the marriage had not been consummated. Otherwise, having been married to his brother, he couldn't have married her according to the laws of the church. So she goes on record. Now Henry's got to prove somehow that she lied, that she actually had relations with her husband before he died. So this becomes a huge controversial issue. In the end, Henry could see no way out. And so he just breaks with the Pope and declares himself the head of the church, divorces Catherine, cuts her head off, marries Anne Boleyn, eventually has her put away, and ends up with 6 wives and gets 3 offspring. 1 son, Edward, who doesn't last very long, dies. And not much changes. Henry changed very little on our notes here in the Church of England. However, when his son Edward VI, the only thing that he changed was he's in charge, not the Pope. So if you think about the average dude going to Mass every week, there's no difference. Nothing whatsoever. Oh, and the other thing he did is he confiscated all of the monasteries, which he needed money because he thought Charles was going to come invade him. So he confiscated all the monasteries, and that was probably a tenth of the entire nation. I mean, they had vast holdings. So they got all this money in the coffers now. So he's got huge military power. But that's about all that changed. Edward VI becomes king in 1547. Now, he's just 9 years old, but his uncle, who is his guardian, is a really born-again, devout Protestant. And he begins, through Edward, to effect real change in the church. But unfortunately, Edward only lives for 6 years. 6 years later, Edward died, and Mary, referred to often as Bloody Mary, although you understand the word bloody to an Englishman is a very severe cuss word. So it's a word you could never say in church. And we see it on, you know, English television shows, bloody this, bloody, you know, it doesn't mean anything to us, but it's scandalous. I mean, it's a bad word in England to this day. And of course, there's been no queen ever coronated as Mary and never will. She's Bloody Mary. A fanatical Roman Catholic began her reign by abolishing the religious innovations of her father and brother. So you think how confusing this is for the average guy, okay? Okay, first we're under the Pope. Okay, now it's Henry. Okay, now he's dead. Okay, now we're Protestants? Okay, cool. 6 years later, now Mary's back. Oh, we're radical Roman Catholics, and we're burning people at the stake. Most of Fox's Book of Martyrs is about the 300 Protestant martyrs that died under Mary. And Mary was brutal, too. You know, there's two different ways to burn someone at the stake. We've talked about this, haven't we? Well, the merciful way is you put wet leaves in there. So it produces a lot of smoke, and you die of asphyxiation very quickly. But Mary's, the way she did it, is the old-fashioned way, is you actually burned at the stake. I mean, just horrible way to die. And she killed over 300 Protestants. They gave their life. Now, she only lasted 5 years. Then Elizabeth became queen and restored Protestantism. So now we're back to Protestantism. During Mary's reign, Thomas Cranmer, who had been, he was the Archbishop of Canterbury, he had sided with Henry and then became a Protestant and recanted. And so then now Mary is going to burn him at the stake. And so he's terrified because he's seen people being burned at the stake. So he signs a document to recant. But then he thinks better of it and he says, nope, rip it up. I'm going to be burned at the stake. I'd rather suffer for my faith than compromise. So he wrote just before he went to die, as my hand offended in writing, by writing the recantation, contrary to my heart, therefore my hand shall be punished. For when I come to the fire, it shall be the first to burned. And as for the Pope, this is his last statement, I refute him as Christ's enemy and Antichrist with all of his false doctrines. So as the fire began to rise, he stuck his right hand in it, and it was entirely consumed. Just watch his hand be burned. This final act of bravery made a deep impression on Protestantism and their resistance to Mary. Puritanism was a Calvinistic movement that sought to purify the Church of England from within. So they'd been influenced by Calvin, but they didn't want to break with the Church of England. They stressed rigid morals, church discipline, conversion as a prerequisite to church membership. So the Puritans wanted to reform the church from within, after the pattern of Geneva. Now, there were some who saw the process of reforming the Church of England from within as entirely hopeless. And, of course, history has shown that they were right. They separated from the church, some going to Holland and others to the new colony of Massachusetts in North America. All right, Counter-Reformation. Counter-Reformation was the revival of the Roman Catholic Church in response to the Protestant Reformation. You know Rome's not going to take this lying down. There's going to be a response. The Council of Trent. Council of Trent. About 1546, although it was over a 20-year period, if you just want a date, 1546, was called to initiate reform in the church and to define its essential doctrines. Now, here's when, again, the church had a chance to listen to some of the things and to make some reformation. But instead, they upheld the traditional Roman Catholic view of transubstantiation, purgatory, relics, indulgences, and prayer to the saints. Their primary decisions were Scripture is but one of the sources of the doctrine of Christianity. Still the official doctrine of Rome to this day, and must be understood within the written and oral tradition of the church. Now that's interesting, you see. It's one thing to say it's one of the doctrines, or one of the sources, but then when you say it can only be understood through the grid of the tradition of the church, you have, in essence, subjugated it to what the church has taught and believed. The seven sacraments bestow merit on the believer and are necessary for salvation. Sacerdotal regeneration. And salvation is by faith and good works. Faith and good works. Ignatius of Loyola, I-G-N-A-T-I-U-S, of Loyola, fascinating guy, founder of the Society of Jesus, a religious order based on unqualified allegiance to the Pope. What are we talking, one of the universities? Jesuit? Ateneo, okay. Ignatius was a soldier, a high-ranking soldier, who was wounded in battle, and he went to this cave to recuperate and was there for 10 months and had a spiritual experience while he was there. And his one goal was to save the papacy from these Protestant infidels. That became his passion. And he took all of his military training and discipline and he transplanted it onto the traditional monastic orders. So he created like a super monk. Yeah, really, it's like the monk, it's like the Marines, the Special Forces.
Or the Uruk-hai.
The Uruk-hai, yeah. Uruk-hai, yeah. I like that. So in normal monastic life, you had to make several vows. There was a vow of poverty, that you wouldn't own anything, a vow of chastity. But then the Jesuits added another vow, absolute, unquestioned, blind loyalty to the person of the Pope. An absolute vow of unconditional loyalty to the person of the Pope. So it's save the Pope. That's what they're all about. And they did. As a result of the Jesuits, they recovered Poland. Poland to this day is the most Roman Catholic nation in the world. More practicing active Roman Catholics in Poland than anywhere in the world because of the Jesuits. Austria, they recovered. Southern Germany, Roman Catholic to this day. They also kept Belgium, Ireland, and missions in America. So because of the Jesuits, those nations were moving towards revival, Protestant Reformation. The Jesuits came in and shut it down. Jesuits were leaders in European education. I mean, if you've been educated in a Jesuit school, generally, you've had one of the finer educations you can possibly have. Sorry to say it. Sorry to say it, but it's absolutely true. Most all the early missions to North America were Jesuits. And some of them, with all of their weird views, were still godly men that did a lot of great good. The Jesuits were the leaders in European education for 150 years. By 1640, they had more than 500 colleges throughout Europe. Their devotion to the papacy called forth opposition from nationalistic rulers and leaders, and their zeal for ecclesiastic reform antagonized the Roman clergy. At one time or another, the order has been expelled from every country in Europe. They were even suppressed by the papacy from 1773 to 1814. Too extreme even for the Pope. So he banned them for that period of time. So what a legacy. They have been kicked out of every nation in Europe at one time or another. They prevented the Reformation, though, from going south. All right, boys. 10 minutes, hold your low buffoonery. I know you can do it. You're godly men. The Spanish Inquisition. Inquisition was established in 1478 to deal with the Jewish problem in Spain. Initially, they forced all the Jews to convert or be killed or banished. But they suspected that many of them were still practicing their Jewish faith. And so they brought in the Inquisition to try the Jews and to find out. After 1520, it turns its attention to persons suspected of Protestantism. It was a crime, punishable by death, certainly. Yeah. The Inquisition became a political institution that executed thousands of reputed heretics, finally suppressed in 1834, so it had quite a life.
Wow.
Yeah. Tomas Torquemada is the famous, the Grand Inquisitor. He is well known for personally executing at least 2,000 people himself. Wow. Yeah. Tomas Torquemada.
He's what? Spanish, of course.
Yeah, Spanish, yeah.
In Peru, when I was there, they even had this museum where they showed some of the equipment they used for torture.
Instruments of torture?
Yeah, for the Inquisition. They had this mechanical devices. So it's crazy.
I mean, that was a demonic mind that thought of those torturous instruments. Terrifying. 30 years war, Reformation closed with a bloodbath. I mean, here's the reality that this Protestant Reformation and all this movement ends in a bloodbath. 30 years of war. Series of European conflicts lasting from 1618 to 1648. Involving most of the countries of Western Europe and fought mainly in Germany. The Peace of Westphalia, Westphalia, signed in 1648, ended the war and fundamentally influenced the subsequent history of Europe. So it established Switzerland, Netherlands as independent states, weakened the Holy Roman Empire, ensured the emergence of France as a chief power on the continent. This war, one of the most destructive in European history, exhausted the continent and opened the door to a new, entirely secular spirit. So, sorry, that period started good, ended bad. All right, we're going to finish here. We have officially made it through our first semester. With nothing that I planned to accomplish finished. But you got the summers off, so enjoy yourself. I'll be back. The schedule is posted, right? And actually, our schedule for the first semester of 2012 is it posted, Ado? 2012, first semester. Can we post that? Can we? We'll post that so you can start making.
We should probably do eschatology before 2012.
You think it's going to happen then, huh?
Just in case.
Yeah, it's all going. All right, see you guys.